Oh boy, we're back on the air. This is Radio Entrepreneurs, or as Taz says, the Donut Show, because we're eating apple cider donuts. Why are we eating apple cider donuts? I'm going to work reverse because we have Terry Boardman of Valente Farms here. Just a spectacular place. But before we introduce her again, I have to say my co-host for the day and for the interview is David Soper from Wicked Local Marketing. Hi, David.
Hey, Jeffrey. How you doing?
Good. Is everything okay for you now? I'm not too much in your space?
Nope. Everything's just fine.
Yeah, pushed over enough?
Just enough.
Yeah. He's very particular. Welcome, Terry.
Thank you for having me.
You know, I've been going to Valente Farms for a long time. When I used to have an office in Needham, people said to me, you know, I used to go down the street and... love the place.
Thank you.
You've really made a commitment and investment in really doing a lot more with the place. You want to tell us about that?
Sure.
You're now really an entrepreneur.
Yeah. So my two brothers and I are current owners. We are the fourth generation of the family business. And, you know, a few years back with a lot of my parents' help, we kind of saw a big change coming. My father knew that there was a lot more potential for the business, but he was not really at that point willing to go through the whole big construction project and kind of expand it himself. But since there were three of us kids all ready to go and interested in running the business, we decided that was the appropriate time to expand. And we started first with the greenhouse, and my brother, Dave, my older brother, really took it upon himself to make a gorgeous, just wonderfully useful greenhouse in the place of where the other outdated ones were. So it was really kind of a nice, innovative, eco-friendly place, and it still is. And we're able to utilize a lot of nature's resources to help us save, you know, other resources and money as well. And then a few years later, we all kind of started the design process and pictured what the new farm stand would look like. And then in 2012, we built it, and the rest is kind of history.
You know, to call it a farm stand is really not appropriate. If you want to call it a farm stand on steroids, okay. Can you give for those listening, can you give us a picture of what the experience would be like? Because it really is quite a spectacular.
Thank you.
A large farm stand before. But you've really, I mean, the finest meats, the finest fruits. I mean, you've really made a commitment to taking a position in the marketplace, haven't you?
Well, thank you. Yeah, that's kind of the objective. We've tried. The original farm stand, or original to my generation, was more of like an open air market, which was really built more like a pole barn kind of a thing. And it's still, we're very still nostalgic for it because we, you know, that's where we grew up. And there's a lot of great memories and, you know, great things that came out of that place. And that's the farm stand my father built. But anyway, so our objective with this new farm stand was not to lose that feeling entirely, because we knew that, you know, our customers wanted that. We wanted that. You know, it still needs to feel like a comfortable farm stand, not some supermarket or anything. We're never interested in being a supermarket.
Right.
So we started with sourcing some local beams. And so right when you walk in the front entrance, it's kind of a two-story open air big barn, essentially, with beams that came from, you know, local states and such close by. And we kept the same boxes that we sell our produce out of. So it's those, you know, green crates that we display the produce in. And we kept a lot of other aspects of it kind of similar so that people weren't thinking that they were walking into an entirely different place. But with this new farm stand, we were able to add, like you said, the meats. We have a farm kitchen.
Not just meats.
Yeah.
Not just meats. The finest meats that you'll find in the finest steakhouses in New England, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So a few years back when John Duer closed his stores, we were fortunate enough to start talking with him. And so we were able to source the meats directly from where he...
That was a big loss, and you've picked up on
it. I know. He's such a great guy. He's been so helpful. Really, really nice guy to work with. My brother, Steve, my younger brother, has worked very closely with him for that. But yeah, great
guy.
But
that's not the only meat you're carrying.
No, we carry all sorts of other meats. We also sell Featherbrook Farm chicken, which is the greatest chicken I've ever had in my entire life. And I'm not just saying that. He just had a write-up in the Globe about it a little while back.
What makes it so good?
Just local, small farm. He really pays attention to the chickens and, you know, nothing added, none of that nonsense. It's just, you can taste the difference. As the chef says, it's hard to overcook it because it's such a nice, like, it's such a good bird. It's hard to mess it up. But with the new farm stand, we were able to add the farm kitchen, which uses all of our homegrown produce whenever we have it available. Our bakery, our pastry department, so we make a lot of stuff from scratch, and then a seasonal ice cream area, as well as a deli.
I think David's in a coma listening to all the
Absolutely.
But the the deli features boar's head meat, and again, we put, as far as our condiments and stuff like that go, that's all made in-house. And we still have, obviously, a greenhouse full of beautiful plants that are also grown by ourselves. If not, then we... You know, we source them locally if we're not able to grow them or if it's out of season for us. And then we also have all of our homegrown produce that we grow in three different fields in Needham and we bring back and sell in our farm stand.
So have you tried to take a step up from the, let's say, grocery store so that you don't have a competitor?
Well, I mean, the homegrown produce...
Because you have a lot of stores right around you. There's Trader Joe's.
Absolutely.
There's...
Whole Foods and all that good
stuff.
I mean,
you're surrounded by grocery stores.
Yeah, and the new Wegmans just opened up down the street, too. But as far as produce goes, I mean, there's in my opinion, I mean, this might sound a little elitist, but it's...
It's hard to get good produce.
Well, there's no competition, you know, for the quality of produce you're going to get. I mean, we're super, super critical of what we put out on our farm stand because we know it's a direct reflection of us. So anything that even has like a little bit of a blemish on it goes straight to the kitchen and they're able to make delicious meals out of it. You know, it's still a perfectly good pepper. It just has one little soft spot. They just cut that out and it's, the rest of it is beautifully usable. but no, so the stuff that we have on our farm stand is just, it's the best quality that you'll find. It's the freshest because we only pick it to what we need. You know, we're not picking a lot of it for a week's supply and then shipping it across the country to get to a store somewhere. And you can physically see where it's grown. So that's a huge deal to our customers to see where their food is coming from.
Could you give us some of the challenges that you've had, say, in the last 5 or 6 years with agriculture? And it's really agri-retail that you're in now, where most of these farm stands have either disappeared or gone big. It's like go big or go home. I mean, it's an old phrase now, but you've decided to go big. Could you tell us some of the challenges and talk about, you know, how you finance perhaps, how you were able to pull all this off? Because this sounds like a very expansive renovation and you were you were able to do it over a short period of time, which is impressive.
Well, thank you. Challenges, at least this past summer, the weather is, you know, as a farmer, you're always at the mercy of whatever Mother Nature feels like throwing your way. But this past summer, it was very, very dry, which in some ways, and my older brother who handles irrigation might kill me later for saying this, but in some ways, it's almost, if you're able to irrigate your crops, it's almost better to be able to be in control of how much water they're getting. It's a ton of work, but at least you're able to control it versus flooding. Exactly, like rain every day.
I saw that in Israel.
Yeah, it's. I mean, there's nothing you can do to get water out of the ground, but there are ways to put it in the ground. So for a lot of farms without irrigation, I know that's been a real big struggle this year, and that's caused a lot of farms to kind of have serious issues. As far as the orchards go, still talking about weather, last year there was a hailstorm which damaged pretty much everything on the trees.
Right.
And then this year, the cold snap right around Valentine's Day was severe enough. You know, it was warm for a few days, and then it got severely cold, and it was enough to really stunt the trees. There were no peaches this year in this area.
Yeah, I didn't have peaches in my bushes, so I saw it.
So we were driving all the way down to Pennsylvania.
There's nothing like a good peach.
I know. So we had to drive all the way to Pennsylvania in order to get them this year. So that, you know, that really hurts those farmers. And then that also means that it has not been a good apple year either because of the dryness and everything. So you're seeing very small apples and apples with a few issues that they may not have had in a good year. So, I mean, that's a huge deal for farmers. I mean, there's insurance, but that only gets you so far.
When I think about some of these fruits, I go back to my childhood. and I remember tomatoes of my childhood. Everybody tells the story about finding a good tomato today. Mm-hmm. Or I think of the peaches that I had in Greece or the cherries I had in British Columbia in the Okanagan Valley that I would bite them and they would literally, they would drip all the way down my face. Mm-hmm. How do you make, you know, grocery stores, I go in, I look at the fruit. I'm so disappointed. Only the hardest make it to the grocery store.
Right.
You know, the hardest, the not sweet. And how do you, you know, bridge the gap from what we had, you know, when I was a child to today, to the disappointment of grocery stores today?
Well, I think I can't speak for what the grocery stores do. I know they have to order in more at a time than we do. So they have to be...
Oh, and the soft ones break and don't make it.
Right. So they have to be kept in storage longer. They have to be picked, you know, not at their peak ripeness, because that's how they ship better and that's how they keep better. But luckily for us, we work with a few local orchards, Sunnycrest Orchards for all of our peaches and a lot of our apples, Brookdale Fruit Farm for apples, and Tugas Family Farms for apples as well. And they have a pick your own operation as well, which is really nice. But the folks that we work with are able to kind of pick to what we need, or they only pick when they should pick. They don't pick them early just because I'm like, oh, I wish I had, you know, another bin of Macallan on my stand. They're like, well, it's not really ready yet. And I'm like, Right. Okay, then wait, I don't want that on my stand yet. You know, I don't want to bring it in until it's ready. So with peaches, Bill at Sunnycrest has really, he's unbelievable at, you know, he's super cautious about picking anything too early because he knows the customers can tell. I mean, he's been around for a while
whisperer.
Doing this. Yeah, he is absolutely the peach whisperer. That is a good name. I'm going to tell him you said that.
Get him a t-shirt that says it.
There you go. But so he's able to pick kind of, you
marketer.
Know, he's able to pick according to when the trees are ready to be picked.
Yep.
And that's
so,
the huge difference.
You know, I'm sure we can continue to talk about this forever because food makes people happy. And you're doing a great job of making people happy.
Thank you.
And making for better homes and better entertainment at home. If somebody wants to find you at Valente Farm or find Valente Farm, mm-hmm. how would they do that?
Well, we're right in Needham. We're on 292 Forest Street, which is nice and easy off the highway. We are also online, just volantefarms.com. Some of our family history is up there, but we have an extensive family history that we're actually going to be publishing into a book and cookbook kind of combo. So it'll be a cookbook and history book combo for next year, because that's going to be our 100th year in business.
Will you bring that in the cookbook and talk to us about it, and we can put it
absolutely.
On our YouTube and
absolutely.
We'll come back again? That's great.
So we're in the kind of final editing stages of that right now, and then it gets shipped off to go get printed. So hopefully sometime spring, early summer of next year, 2017, which is going to be our 100th year, we'll have that available for sale. Yeah. And it features some of kind of our family heirloom recipes, and then mostly recipes from our farm kitchen, Chef Todd, and, you know, a lot of great pictures in there and a lot of just great, great stuff going into this book.
How wonderful.
Yeah. Thanks.
That's great. Well,
we're excited.
Keep it up.
Thank you.
Again, my name is Jeffrey Davis. I'm host of Radio Entrepreneurs and also chairman of the board of Mage LLC. Here with David Soper. David, hungry?
I'm very hungry. Very hungry.
Right. I want to thank you again for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
You come back again.
Thanks. I will.
Chris, how many donuts did you eat?
One with a margin of error of three.
Between one and three is the commitment. He doesn't want to give us a full commitment. We're going to take a break. We'll have another donut done before our next interview on Radio Entrepreneurs.